one, at least one large part of the economics profession had nothing to offer. And Keynes comes along, and he gives this one, which provides him with a sort of
revenue. Certainly, it would be have to be followed by a period of deflation, and there was nothing you could do about that.
That was a split in the reserve system. New York did not believe that.
Well, they did. Increasingly, seemed to becoming to that view before us.
And
we talk about Harrison. Harrison is not clear. He's a lawyer, and it's not clear that Harrison's main thing was never putting himself in a situation.
He and Carl Snyder. Carl Snyder certainly did not have that view.
No, certain. But he was a.
Well, he was a sort of a protege of Strong's, I think. Maybe not. I think Harrison's, when he expressed his view about the situation, he was pretty much echoing what Strong had said. You say he didn't have the character to carry the system with him.
It was interesting to the topic, but I kept thinking, this is going to be great. In that it brings a solution to a problem where he might fail. If they repeated what Schacht had done, could stop speculation, and then in desperation the Reichsbank did that. Very negative feeling about Harrison. And I talked to the archivist at the New York Fed, who has an interest in the personal, came out publicly, and people never knew.
Testified before Congress, and I guess papers are mostly at Columbia, aren't they?
Well, the New York Fed was short, but you talked about experience with the. Plus, I needed a better theme for an entire century. Where does the concept of a modern central bank come from? That is. We take for granted today the idea of a modern central bank, where the modern central bank controls its objective, either externally through manipulation of other than relying on government direct intervention controls or exchange rate controls or price controls or well, period of time. And now, of course, we just take it for granted. So my departure was to start from something you talked about, which is fascinating thing, is to go back and try to kind of team. Through association, people think they learn how the work, the conclusions people draw from episodes of financial and economic instability, then markets then shape the kind just in the early 50s before there was any sort of general. If you want free markets, if you believe in free markets, then you're very constrained in terms of the kinds of monetary arrangements. We don't have it in trans, you know, central banks talk about kind of the ideas, well, where did that come from? It came through this series of experiments, of disastrous experiments, and also through a change in attitudes toward free markets, where eventually we began financial stability correlated with economic stability. It was really instability in monetary arrangements. We had to get markets that constrained you in terms of the kinds of monetary arrangements.
Yes, when did the Bundesbank start?
Well, the Bundesbank, there was something called Bank Deutscher Länder that was promulgated by the Allies before the currency reform in March of 1948, German law.
When
but the Bundesbank received its mandate in 1958.
Or something. There was an order.
The Bank Deutscher Länder.
And how? When did that get started?
March 1948.
Well, that didn't.
June 1948.
But there was a central bank during. I'm confused. I'm not thinking of the particular name. But when did a central bank, the initial central bank, get started in Germany?
Oh, you mean the Reichsbank in the 19th century? Was created. With the gold reparations from France, and those gold reparations formed the reserves of the Reichsbank. So that would have been 1870.
That's when they
it was a quasi-private government bank.
That's when they really bought up all the silver. in order to convert from a bimetallic to a gold standard.
Right.
And your history dates from when?
Well, my history dates, I start
with the hyperinflation after World War I, at which point the Reichsbank was still the operative central bank.
Right. A wonderful section where he says there's a quality of outcome because they associated that with the material progress of the 19th century, inequalities of wealth. But in the hyperinflations that followed World War I, the creation of wealth was associated, destroyed the moral basis for the earlier capitalist. So, and this isn't, it also creates a society where individuals don't see the enhancement of their own. People have that perception, that they don't see the betterment of their own, attack the speculators and identify them with wealth. In a way, you get out of this period, and this is eerily like Argentina. So, economically, and this is in your actually output continues to increase in through early 1923 because the German government intervenes to continue to force transactions to take course, and because the farmers withhold it, and you get food riots, and you come close to keepers who they associate with being Jewish, and one of the really fascinating things about this is how close Germany came to repeating that experience after World War II. I read the chapter in General Clay. Cigarettes are being used as commodity money, and the Germans very much resent that privileged position of the Americans. Furiously enforce price control so that there's no black market and try to stamp out, and of course Clay doesn't say this, but the food, it's like 1923, then the farmers stop sending food to the cities, and so then the country begins to move into starvation. It's actually quite well off in that it's had this huge influx of well-educated. Sadly to say, American bombing was not particularly effective. Their capital stock is pretty good off. But the, you know, they're being established this commission of German, fully committed to central planning. Okay. Well, under his watch, shipments of American corn to Germany as chicken feed. Now, the Germans were translating from a dictionary. It's fed corn to chickens. So they thought it was chicken feed. But the American censors, the Americans who read this letter, interpreted it as a pejorative term. And they fired this guy because of it. And Earhart had been listening to the ordo liberals, the Ruppke and Eucken. And, you know, I've often thought about this when you gave your talk at the Western meeting. Here was an extraordinary example where ideas were important. And the story, Clay was opposed to lifting price controls and elimination. And they saw these rationing coupons as keeping them alive. And they didn't, if the ration cards disappeared, they might starve to death. And so there was no willingness to change the system. And the Americans weren't willing to change it because the state would be well off, and the people who had their deposits, all the social tensions that you had in the hyperinflation, and so they weren't willing. Hart, on his own initiative, signs his decree eliminating the ration cards, authority to do it. And when he walks into the office of General Clay, General Clay confronts him and he says, "My experts tell me this won't work." And Earhart says, "That's what my experts tell me." Clay trusted him. Clay liked him. It was a character thing. And so you got the, you went from this, and a whole section on post-war Germany where you see the development of political campaigns organized around boys. pointing out black market deals to the policemen, you know, going. So you can see it developing all over again, this feeling where the individual feels a sense of helplessness, so it begins to look to the scapegoats, and then the politicians, you know, begin to identify the scapegoats. And the cushion effect of how the economy grew after that had a different way. So, and here's an example where monetary arrangements.
Also, what they also illustrate is the enormous importance of nominal prices. Same thing, it's why it is, just as all it took there was to lift those nominal, let those nominal prices go. The same thing as in Argentina. Why weren't they able to let real prices come down? Say, the difficulties of Japan, of Argentina, of East Germany, are all examples of the same phenomenon that Earhart was dealing with. They're all examples of price control. Only in those cases, what you have are essentially minimum prices, not maximum prices.
It's destroyed the society is to watch the currency, even more nefarious through deflation, because how the dollar had appreciated relative to the mark by 15%. That was complete for the peso. And also, you had worldwide fall in commodity prices, which should have further weakened the terms of trade against Argentina. So it was, had to have been something like 25% overvalued. But A, there's no understanding of individuals. The price system
there's
doesn't
no mechanism for getting it. See, take the, but it is interesting. You take the difference between Argentina then and after the Civil War. Just after the Civil War had the same problem. Greenback, they wanted to get back to pre-war value of the greenback in terms of gold. And that required almost a halving of prices. They did because their prices were flexible. Now what was it, and why is it, that the U.S. and the after the Civil War, Argentina was not able to achieve. Yeah, and I don't know what
apparently, I mean, in this, I think I'm just economic disruption.
Real prices
that
in
you
terms
could
of gold.
That you could
yeah.
you could watch. So yeah. Gold could serve as a unit of account.
Mm-hmm. Right. Of course, it was in the west of the United States that gold continued to be used all during that period. And the west did not suffer very much from that recession. East, and other than the west, gold was not really being used. See, in the west, gold was all through that period, it was continued to be used as a medium of exchange.
In terms of long term.
Yeah, all lending contracts had gold. They weren't eliminated until Roosevelt came along. The bulk of long-term loan contracts had gold clauses.
There were always price controls, but they were not.
World War II Germany, army enforcing them.
I'm trying to think of using the dollar as a unit of account, adjust prices and use the mark as a medium of exchange. But they can separate those two functions of
to a greater extent, there's no doubt.
But
no, that's a good thing.
In Argentina, with the currency board, they take these other prices as gifts to go from there to say, but that price also serves another function.
That way, in the hyperinflation, there's always a free foreign exchange market of dollars and marks, if I remember.
Yes.
One thing you had was that there was publicly available what the dollar price of the mark was. No basis for dollar prices of individual items. That's a little far-fetched. How do you know what the dollar price of a bushel of wheat is? Widespread. Who held it?
Very widespread.
Well, where did they get the dollars? After World War I?
already forcing a deflation because of the value. Not only were German exporters doing well, a lot of speculative capital was flowing into Germany. Ought there to be this appreciation? So I think there was an inflow of.
Been in a, you know, relatively narrow class. It would not have been in the population at large.
Supposed to be a rye bank. That is, if they could control the rye price of the currency, and then the finance minister said, no, that's not feasible.
When did Germany go back on gold?
It went back on gold in December.
When did Earhart come into power? When did he issue his famous number of years? 48, that was 3 years after.
Price controls. Eisenhower could never bring himself to default. The United States came in, that the change in of attempting to identify.
Yeah, that concept, in what sense, is there a different concept in 19, sure the bank was different.
There was.
Washington had more power and the banks had less.
There, to prevent financial panics and recessions, you had to think about that and you say, we're not going to have a major depression because there's been this change in intellectual environment that makes, well, we've also got the FDIC. But the other side of that is we don't have an institutional arrangement that can prevent, and the dollar was somewhat overvalued. But we had most of the world's gold stock. So we were willing to let our gold stock run down. The system was able to work for a while. And so your prediction that this, it was this adventitious then after World War II because of the age, we were willing to live with these gold out. So the system sort of is important.
Well, you're suggesting a parallelism between the post-war situation and staying undervalued and pulling gold out of Britain. And you're suggesting essentially pulling gold out of the United States.
And then pay to its other,
whereas
to
France,
other undervalued.
Whereas France,
overvalued.
In the 20s, it kept the gold at home.
It was unfortunate. Everybody thought World War I was going to be a repeat of the Franco-Prussian War.
Right.
And so this is because it was would be a way of admitting that Germany wouldn't have to pay the reparations. But when they inflated is they pushed the value of the bottom line of the pre-war parity that they could not go back to the...
That's
to,
right.
And that was the
they
tragedy of it.
That.
So they had to change the value of the franc. And when they did it...
undervalued the franc.
They undervalued the franc. And so when the gold came in, they were fresh off this experience with near hyperinflation, and they were afraid let prices rise because of that experience with the inflation. And OPEC wasn't credible, and they would have blown large amount of money. So the system's fragile because you don't have much kind of gold flowing, or you don't have much gold that's available to move from central bank. Operations are being financed by capital inflows from the United States to Germany. They drive the bonds in New York, and that's what you don't have to worry about German military might. So they're, for them, and this is the big difference after World War II, think about Hitler, but the response period, none of it need happen, and us. Okay, you want us to forgive German reparations? Well, you forgive.
This was not very receptive to it, because they really wanted to get back at Germany.
Well, that's
and they had the whole of Eastern Europe to worry about as well.
That's what made
Austria.
That was what was so was a hysterical. Newspaper campaign in France and Germany, what became politically acceptable as a reference.
Story on Germany after the war,
right,
after World War II.
It was because it was viewed as modern.
Post-war period?
No, thinking about the end of the 19th century, about the last monetary union. And, in the period when the goal, I think what you're pushing me is to, if I've got this way of thinking about how does society adapt certain kinds of monetary arrangements, is if I think about, you know, why there was support for a gold standard.
A gold standard was associated with Britain.
Yeah.
When you go back to that period, it was by all odds the dominant world economy. I mean, quite explicitly. When it went on the gold standard after the Franco-Prussian War.
By issuing paper in London, and then you needed to be on the gold standard to have your...
You're going
to
be just as good as Britain. Show that you could be. After all, you had just won a war against France. You were a stock model.
Well, that's one of the... Mark would replace
London
as the world's financial center.
Sure.
And that's what was pushing the for the gold standard rules.
I don't know what would have happened in the absence of World War I. Because
it came out of the progressive movement.
We would have had the Federal Reserve System, there's no doubt, but it was already enacted before World War I. Which is what I
1913. It began operation in
1913. 12.
Right. Yeah. Unlike Stone, in human history, we had, it was never the same after those three things. Heading to create. The heading that has kind of values where the sin of America has been that part of your work ethic. You can make yourself better off. So choice makes government is imposed from top down. And governments, particularly in the case of a country like Egypt, so governments are imposed from the top down. You have the feeling that you can change something by voting is not there. It's where individual initiative aligns with, like they live in a world where choice is meaningless. It doesn't affect their welfare. There's a sense of helplessness and despair. And that's the sort of world that you had where people look for scapegoats. They look for helplessness creates anger. If you, when I'm in a situation where I feel like somehow I'm out of control, like my time is being wasted from this feeling of being out of help. Scapegoats channel anger, and you can think kind of fundamentally about how to create a society where property rights, so people feel like when they go out and they can make a choice, they can make themselves. And what we've done, if you think about foreign aid, for example, and the way they have to feel like we're doing a good job of, maybe we strictly a very rare thing to see societies organized around protection, to think very fundamentally about, you know, what we have and how to.
You certainly can't spread it through World Bank or through foreign aid. No way you can do that. So how we can spread it? I think we have to remove obstacles to it more than spreading it. Because by example, I've always done that.
Free trade.
It's hard to think of any place. Well, the only successful example I can think of spreading it is Hong Kong. Benevolent to dictate. We spread it in a sense by the collapse of the Soviet Union. We spread it through the former Soviet system, Poland, Czech Republic, Hungary. So far as our actions are concerned, in some cases they were perverse rather than favorable.
And Argentina is just the saddest case of that, up extreme to the other, from currency board to the hyperinflation, from deflation.
World War II.
Mm-hmm.
Argentina did have a rule of law, and it was very successful. Someone came along.
The wealth was entrance to the ruling class after support from urban labor unions and shifted. And for a while, countries like Argentina grew, probably, and these countries then, and then they have no way of creating creating wealth, and then they go to...
The history is the German story, the German history, the main thing you've been working on?
No, I've written an overview of U.S. monetary policy through why you got the start of stop-go monetary policy. I pretty well have gotten an exposition of the quant, and the difference in explicit return is the monetary policy works because the monetary authority, by shutting down kind of all the markets and all the margins and then opening them just one, got the analysis by imposing, they're not going to go back and they're not going to read it. It's too much work. It's too hard work. So my next project when I get back to Richmond is to optimizing general equilibrium, dynamic, all the bells and whistles sort of stuff. But I think that that's what's needed to communicate, and I think that what those models is that they aren't variables for a central bank. That to what a central bank like the Fed does when you look at what it does, and all it ever talks about is what payroll employment did last month. All this out in a model that economists can extraordinarily few expositions of the quantity theory and the fingers of your hands. I think we very much need a new exposition that takes it to what what we see central banks doing. So that's what I think I sort of got it worked out in my mind. So that's what all the chapters are there. I just have to write and put them together.
Chapters do you think you have already?
Well, that's
down an outline of the book.
Yeah, I've done that. In ways that aren't ultimately maybe useful. I spent a lot of time.
That's what you're getting paid for.
That's what I'm getting paid for. And ultimately, it's stimulative in the sense that it's moderately optimistic that I won't die young and I'll get it done. I can't say. I don't know quite. I don't know quite how you try to develop a protege or something, I guess.
No. You just got to forget about that and just keep going.
Yeah. A lot of the talking,
I can't remember if I remember right now. Was a member of the board. I could have contact somehow or other with Aaron.
Aaron, director, must have known. Well, I guess everybody knew who Hayek was, but Hayek must have known that, or one of the two must have initiated communication. Either Hayek wrote to director, or director wrote.
No, it came. I think it came through Montfort, and I think that. Don't ask me how, because this is just a vague memory that's coming to me. Hayek appealed to Montfort to help him. He was in Washington at that time too, and so I think it was Hayek. And then Hayek was invited to come to the United States. Came to the United States, and so it wasn't for Hayek's trip to sure the exact date. It was Lunar who also financed, essentially, Hayek's stay at the University of Chicago. That's a little later.
Yes.
I come to Chicago.
1950, maybe?
Our meeting was 47.
Seven.
47, as I say.
Mm-hmm.
Time when I would have met.
Other Americans invited to the Mount Pelham Society meetings?
The list of people.
Haberler was invited. Well, I can get that.
I have right here.
Oh, okay. That's two.
Let's see. Book that was created at the after the first Mount Pelham conference with all the pictures about people. And you have a list of participants right here. John Davenport was American. Carl Brandt, he was ex-German, but he was at the time of John's, who was American. Frank was influential. Not only that, Hazlitt was a voter for many, many years. Which is now going to goes to Will, and because it's very important. Morley, he was in. Rupke was in. One of the, probably the leading influence. Mixed bag with Rupke. He was an agrarian. With Leonard Reed.
Well, the Order of Liberals managed, many of them managed to stay sort of European libertarians in the help of the government to maintain free markets. The government was supposed to prevent private monopolies and so on. So they gave the government a lot of power, assuming the government would do the right thing, would be benevolent in protecting their freedom of choice. So there was a naivete about...
That would have been agrarian international.
Say agrarian and some of your letters and before.
See, these are the pictures of all
the location. Switzerland. I was
thinking. It's all Switzerland.
Yeah.
But there's a one day long day tour, which we all went on a that's a Leonard Reed.
I remember very early on.
So lots of influences on you at this time, but two of the influences in terms of characteristic views that you had, they must have been this...
Much more. Aaron Director, Frank Knight, they certainly had more... Arthur Burns, current society did, was to enable me to... was very influential. Just directly, immediately by the...
environment, and also, it must have been important to be in debate with the we're very capable people.
Oh, hey,
and
very able group.
And it must have been a wonderful to debate with.
No, it was. You're emotionally committed to what they're saying. You're saying it because they believe in it, and not because they're just right.
Did you ever know Oscar Lange? Had he left by?
Yes, I met Oscar Lange. In fact, in 1934.
Is there something about his personality that would make him feel equally comfortable in Poland as in the United States that would be very different from Jacob Marszak, for example? I mean, of these people you consider Valrasians, were there, was...
Oh, I really did not have enough contact with Lange.
Were there any of the Kyle's Commission people you were close to in terms of the way you were close to, say, Aaron Director, George Stigler, you could just go and talk to, so there was... Yeah.
No, I was close to them.
As colleagues. Yeah.
But,
Robin, I guess, was there for a while. Was there
no.
Recent, he was never there.
He was never there.
Christ.
Carl Christ was there. He was there. Well, there's a real difference.
I met him once. He seemed very...
No, he was not...
Yeah.
He was not a Coles Commission person. He was at the Coles Commission and was very...
You think, when you say Coles Commission person, would they be very different from an Alvin Hansen Keynesian? So their first devotion was to statistical inference, were they really solidly Keynesian?
No, their first devotion was to mathematical systems.
Yeah. Or scientists.
That's right.
They were not. Alvin Hansen, economist, whose first commitment was to a program of social reform through government.
Scientists. They were definitely scientists and scholars. They were not.
They were somewhat apolitical.
Oh, they were very apolitical.
Did you have any... I noticed in reading through your letters a number of times you were in the situation of having to write character letters for people who had to appear before loyalty boards. Did that at the time seem like a normal thing, or did it seem distasteful?
It seemed extremely distasteful.
Okay.
It never seemed normal.